Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with Stephanie Dombra, The Positive Mind, here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And we look at everything. We look at everything. Nowadays, I remember 5 years ago, no, it must have been more, maybe 7 years ago, I was in Paris. And I saw that everybody in Paris was talking on a cell phone when walking down the street. And I said to myself, that's remarkable. We don't have that many people walking down our streets talking on cell phones. Well, the difference is that in Paris, back in those times, landlines were terrible. The lines underneath the earth and the lines that they had, communication system was terrible. That the cell phone presented the only true way to have a communication. Whereas we here in America, we had these good landlines that were terrific. You remember landlines? I could tell you, I get on a phone nowadays. I could talk on a cell phone to somebody else on a cell phone. It's not the same. There's something about the quality of talking on a regular phone to a regular person on a regular phone that seems so much more intimate. Intimate, in a way. I guess that's because your voice is not digitized, or maybe it is anyway nowadays. What do you think, Stephanie? You think they digitize the voice? You think that it's always broken down into segments and fed back even on a landline?
I don't think so, because it sounds differently on the landline, and I know with music, when you play music on a landline to let another person on the other end hear it, it sounds clear, but if you do it with cell phones,
that's
it breaks up.
That's a good point. I could take my landline and put it in my headphone. See if I have a good pair of headphones. Right, a good set of headphones, and I could just put the speaker or the microphone, the mouthpiece, into one part of it, and you'll hear the music perfectly well, beautifully. But if you do that with a cell phone, no way, Jose, right? It breaks up, it digitizes, and it does not redigitize in the right kind of way. Okay, so what am I saying? I'm a romantic. I'm saying I'm an old-fashioned guy. I'm saying, oh, give me the old ways. Not necessarily so. Scientists say juggling email, phone calls, and other incoming information can change how people think and behave, and maybe it's time we changed. Holding on to the old ways is not always the best way. You know, it's not to make room for evolution. They say our ability to focus is being changed significantly by bursts of information. Now, how is the brain altering? If you watch anything in evolution, if you watch how a species evolved, everyone, you always see that the species evolved to do one of three things, right? What's each animal's job in life? We have three jobs?
We have three jobs.
What are the three jobs?
To find something to eat.
Right. Find something
to eat. To pass on our genes.
Pass on our genes.
And to not be eaten.
And to not be eaten. That's it. The three rules of all of the life forms. Find something to eat, pass on your genes, and don't get eaten. Right? It's nice. Well, here we as humans, we have to adapt. Because in order to find something to eat, things become different. Now we have cell phones, computers. So these pieces of information play a primitive impulse to respond immediate opportunities and threats. The stimulation of the cell phone, email, other incoming information provokes an excitement. And this excitement, if you're chemically speaking, is a dopamine squirt. Yep, an old dopamine squirt. A squirt of dopamine. What is that? It means it's a neurotransmitter that suddenly gets bigger and that you have a different feeling from it. More ability to communicate, to move. A dopamine squirt. It's almost like going for the endorphins.
Well, and dopamine is involved in many different functions for us. It's involved with eating. It's involved with movement. It's involved with focus. It's involved with excitement, anticipation. It's just so multi-layered what it does for us as humans.
So if you get random squirts of dopamine, which can come from external stimuli such as computers, cell phones, iPads, iPhones, G-phones.
What's a G-phone?
I don't know. It's something they're going to invent any day now.
Okay. Apple will be right there.
Apple will be right there. But what happens is it becomes addictive. Now, the squirt becomes addictive, and how can you tell? You can tell because if you're a driver or if you're in a taxi cab and you're turning a corner, there will be a woman or a man on the phone rolling a baby. Now,
That sounds funny, Armand, rolling a baby.
Isn't that rolling a baby? Isn't that what you do?
Pushing a baby carriage.
Okay.
Pushing a stroller.
Yeah, but, you know, you can see in... To me, there's a certain consciousness about taking care of your children. But everybody has consciousness, and everybody looks, and if you're talking on a cell phone while crossing a street, you're not the most alert, but we've learned something. You don't have to be. That even though it sounds like a dangerous thing to do, it's not. Because the drivers are aware of people on cell phones, and the people on cell phones are aware that the drivers are aware of them. So nothing makes a person hurry. If they got their hand up to their ear and their baby is in front of you, somehow they are protected by the drivers.
Only when the driver isn't holding a cell phone.
And when the driver's holding a cell phone, too.
Mm.
Right? But it's an amazing dance that we do. Because the truth of it is, we hear very few accidents that are cell phone involved that are not on the driving side. You know, people don't bump into people because they were on the cell phone. People don't fall down holes because they were in the cell phone. You think there are a lot of accidents due to cell phone use?
Texting, yes, that's what's come out.
Oh, and
cars. It's not young people, actually. It's an older group of people driving and texting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that has come out recently in the news.
Well, millions of people have found that the dopamine squirt of a cell phone, this kind of energy that it gives you, is addictive. So if you're walking and you have a cell phone, you almost want to pick it up and use it. It's like it calls to you. It's like a cigarette used to be. I wondered what happened to cigarettes. They were replaced by cell phones. If you look at it, you think about it, it's near the lips. It's available. You pull it out of your pocket. It's about the size of a pack of cigarettes, right? So instead of smoking, which used to be 30 years ago, everybody would be smoking. Now everybody's on a cell phone. Same oral thing. We've just found an oral substitute. You know, maybe less harmful, maybe not less harmful. We don't know. But the resulting distractions have had some deadly consequences. Cell phone wielding drivers and train engineers cause wrecks. And for millions of people, the urges can inflict nicks and cuts on creativity and deep thought. They interrupt work. They interrupt family life. While many people say multitasking makes them more productive, research shows otherwise. Heavy multitaskers actually have more trouble focusing and shutting out irrelevant information. And they experience more stress. Now, that's kind of odd, isn't it? Multitasking should be a sign of an evolved brain, but it could also be a sign of a brain that's going under because you can't complete anything.
And I'm not sure that we all understand what multitasking is. People have described that multitasking isn't that you're actually doing a few things at the same time, but you're doing something maybe one thing, and then after that you do another thing, and then after that. So I don't think that we can actually do five things absolutely at the same time simultaneously. That's what people seem to think that multitasking is. It's completing something and then going on to the next, completing something and then going on to the next.
That's true multitasking.
I think that's probably the better understanding of it. I mean, we have stories, and I don't know if it's in this particular article, where this one man who was trying to make million-dollar deals selling software packages. He's running three different computers at the same time. He's got two different Blackberries and iPhones, and he's got the video game going. And this is a man who is functioning, but at what expense? That he has to have all those things around him to function. And I can't imagine with two eyes that you can look at everything at the same time with the same intensity.
But Steph, what if you were instead disabled and you now had, instead of cell phones, you had artificial limbs doing it? You know, it's almost like we're growing artificial parts. In fact, we're robotizing ourselves. We're making ourselves into just what the monkeys did. You know what the monkeys figured out? You could use a stick to bang open a coconut. So we're finding extensions of ourselves. We are evolving. And the cell phones and the iPad and the computers are part of our evolution. And what they're doing is they're giving us different abilities and maybe reducing some others. But one thing for sure, there is a reinforcement over and over again to be active on external data, and that reinforcement is the dopamine squirt. That should be a dance.
The dopamine squirt.
The dopamine squirt. Let's do it. You know, sounds like a Michael Jackson step.
Right.
There goes the dopamine squirt.
Yeah.
Scientists discovered that even after multitasking ends, fractured thinking and lack of focus persists. In other words, this is also your brain off computers. The technology is rewiring our brains, said this woman, Nora Volkoff, director of National Institute of Drug Abuse and one of the world's leading brain scientists. She and other researchers compared the lure of digital stimulation less to that of alcohol and drugs than to food and sex, which are essential but counterproductive in excess. So she finds the lure of the digital stimulation less to that of drugs and alcohol, but more of sex and food. So it could create a different kind of compulsion. Technology use can benefit the brain in some ways, researchers say. Imaging studies show the brains of internet users become more efficient at finding information. Right? That's what we all do, and our kids do it right away. If I ask my nephew something, he whips out his phone. He says, let's look it up. And he gets an answer right away. Players of some video games develop better visual acuity. More broadly, cell phone and computers have transformed life. They let people escape their cubicles and work anywhere. That's now the ability of it. They shrink distances and handle countless mundane tasks, freeing up time in many ways for many other things. So is it better or is it worse?
Well, what are the other many things? See, freeing up time, I think it's true. There's so many benefits to all this technology. But does it free up people's time to go and do the quote-unquote old-fashioned things that we used to do to recreate? Or do you just get freed up to do more of the technological things?
Mm-hmm.
So that I find...
It's a good question. At the moment, what you would imagine is if you get more free time, you want to use that free time in an efficient kind of way to create more something. But maybe the swing will be in that direction. Maybe we'll learn that by being free of our office, like I just spoke to someone who's an advertising exec, Margot, you know her, and she said, we have a cubicle. She works in an advertising company, and we have a one floor has 36 cubicles, and everybody sits in their cubicle. And everybody has a big, giant computer and an iPad. And they all come in all day and sit down and create. That's what they do. They sit down and they create. Over and over again, they're creating advertising. She said it's a whole different world. People don't talk to each other.
They don't mix and mingle and talk to each other?
No, they wave.
Wow.
And they stay in their cubicle. And they create. And the more they create, the more they get paid. So
amazing. It's
amazing. It's a whole different world. Your cubicle is now your world. You put on a set of headphones. You don't need an office anymore. You close down everything, and nobody will interrupt you. We're exposing our brains to an environment, and we're asking our brains to do things we weren't necessarily evolved to do. And there are going to be some consequences. There's a guy named Joseph Campbell who, at age 43, not that Joseph Campbell.
Oh, another Joseph, yeah.
He came of age
after
the president, and he is a heavier use of technology than most. But researchers say that the habits and struggles of him and his family typify what many experience. For him, the tensions feel increasingly acute, and the effects harder to shake. He moved from California to Oklahoma to start a business. He goes to sleep with a laptop or an iPhone on his chest, and when he wakes, he goes online. He and his wife head to the tidy kitchen in their four-bedroom hillside rental, where she makes breakfast and watches a TV news program fed into the corner in a computer, while he uses the rest of the morning to check his email. And that's what's happened to them. Major spats have arisen because Mr. Campbell escapes his video games during tough emotional stretches. He goes to video games. And that's how he relaxes. On family vacations, he has trouble putting down his devices. When he rides the subway, he knows he'll have to go offline for 221 seconds as the train goes underground. The 16-year-old son recently received his first C's, with the family blames on distractions from his gadgets. Now, you have kids. Is there a limitation to how much they could use their gadgets, Stephanie? What do you do? How do you balance them?
Well, again, I'm always bringing in music. The beauty of music in the kids' lives is that they're actually playing a lot. So they're not on the computer. If they're at school, they're not on the computer. When they get home, they play instruments. And so, yes, they are on the computer. It's just that the way it goes. But most of the things that my son does is music on the computer.
Well, when you say he's doing music on the computer, is he creating music?
Sometimes he's writing songs, sometimes he's listening, and sometimes he obviously communicates with friends. But it's so apparent that you have to be conscious of how much time has to be spent or limited on the computer. So it's just part of life. We try
and
to balance it.
And this is what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it's not a judgment. Of course, anybody over 50 looks at it and says, ah, what a disease these cell phones are. You know, they kind of move against them. And the younger people can't see another way. There are people who never knew of a landline.
I know. Well, they may know of a landline, but they don't know what life is without a computer or cell phone, some of the young people, because they were around. For 20 years, cell phones have been around, have they not? 15?
Yeah.
I can't remember the start of this whole boom with cell phones, but these kids have been around with that, so they don't know anything else.
So they're a whole different generation, and their life is a whole different life. It's very different. It's not like if we were to compare the people born in the 40s to the people born in the 50s and 60s. That comparison was still okay because technology wasn't there yet. The technological boom that happened over the last 30 years really changed the generations. It's all different. The generations are different. I mean, to think that you can carry a phone and if you're anywhere in the world and you want to get anywhere else in the world, you just push a button and it tells you how to get there. It tells you which way to go. It shows you a map. It gives you a phone number. It tells you where to get gas, where to get candy, and where you can find a shopping mall.
Well, I think we have much more information than we ever could imagine we could get quickly. But that is where I believe that it does a disservice to our growing new neurons and doing wonderful things for our brain. We know that when they study or do brain scans of London cab drivers, those men are not, or they weren't, when they did this study, using any kind of GPS device. And those men had incredible kind of pathways because they knew those roads and systems in London like nobody else. So I think that there is a downside, obviously, to not using your brain naturally and challenging. There's kids that will never know how to read a map because of these devices. There is always a blessing and a curse with these things.
And the GPS is specifically one because I've watched my own brain go haywire on it. You know, I've had a GPS and I used it when I was going from one place to another, and then one day it stopped working. I couldn't figure out how to make it work. I couldn't figure out how to make myself figure out where I was going. My old skills just kind of disappeared.
Yeah.
And they come back. They come back.
That's the beauty of the brain, the neuroplasticity. That's why I like a compass in a car. As long as I know what direction I have to go, I travel north, south, east, west on Long Island. You can't get lost.
Multitasking. Now, this is what you were talking about. They divided these test subjects into two groups, those classified as heavy multitaskers based on their answers to questions about how they use technology and those who were not. In a test, subjects at a computer were briefly shown an image of red rectangles, and then it became very complex. The multitaskers did a significantly worse job than the non-multitaskers at recognizing whether red triangles had changed positions or not. It was the multitaskers did not have the efficiency as the non-multitaskers. So here's what they're saying. Many things going on in your brain. Your brain doesn't make the links that will give you the kind of efficiency. You may get more area covered. You may get more done, but you will not get more completed. And that's kind of obvious. You know, jack of all trades, master of none, in a way, you know. Yet, on the other part of a brain, there's a part of the brain, more primitive parts of the brains love the multitasking because that's where the neuroplasticity comes in. We learn, we learn, we learn. How much new stuff do you learn every day, Stephanie? Did you ever think about it? Did you ever quantify it? How much
I can't
do we
quantify
learn,
it,
you know?
Yeah.
It's not like sitting at the beach. You sit at the beach, you look at the water, you look at the water, you know, you relax. That's nice. I could do that for a week or 2 weeks or something like that. You just, you know, hang out nice. No newspapers, no news, no nothing. Vacation. But my brain's not learning. There's nothing I'm seeing. I may be thinking, but I'm not getting the kind of stimulation that leads to my creative thinking. You know? And then take that very same person and put me in a city where that I don't know, and I'm learning every minute.
I think it's impossible not to. We're surrounded. Obviously, if you get too much stimulation and you're too bombarded, the brain probably doesn't have that ability to say, okay, I can hold on to that. Because I wonder how much we remember. We might be getting the information at that moment, but I don't know how much you can commit to memory.
Well, then the question becomes about vacation. Is vacating a good idea if you're not learning? Is the idea, I'm now going to go to the beach and lay on the beach for 2 weeks, is that good for the brain? Maybe it is. Maybe it's good for the body. Maybe it's good for the oxygen. Maybe you need to do it. Maybe it's like sleep.
Well, I think people have to decompress. When I see people going at such a clip and they are stressed and their bodies are breaking down, then I absolutely believe in rest and decompressing.
Well, you see, I believe that if you have to rest and decompress, that means you've been compressed the rest of the time.
Yes.
I like the Swiss cheese method. I like the Swiss cheese method instead.
Which means what?
Which means have holes in your day.
Yes.
So, in other words, let the air through your day. If you're going to slow it down a little bit, slow it down. Become like Swiss cheese. Don't become like a block of cheddar.
Good. Good image, Armand.
You like this image?
Yeah.
Block of cheddar on the beach. I can see it melting. Not so good.
Okay. Very good.
All right. So throughout evolutionary history, a big surprise would get everyone's brain thinking. But we've got a large and growing group of people who think that the slightest hint that something interesting might be going on is like catnip, and you can't ignore it. Stanford studies are important because they show multitasking's lingering effect. The scary part of it is that you can't shut off that multitasking ability. And I've seen people do that. I have a couple of people who sit with me. Someone came to visit me the other day, and she was cleaning up my desk while she was talking with me. She was arranging things on my desk. Because she had to. She couldn't just be there. And there are many people who just cannot be still. So here's the question I ask of us, my friends. Can you be still? Can you find a way to be present and be still? The Swiss cheese that I'm looking for, the holes that I'm looking for, is the ability in the middle of our very busy day for you to find air by resting. And it's not resting going to sleep. It's quieting your mind. It's slowing it down. It's being able to take a word or two or take a moment or two and just let yourself fade. A little bit of a fade, you know? A few seconds. Some time. We just say, I could now just be present. We forget to do it, you know. We forget. We forget to be present. So my good friend Dieter used to come in town, and when he'd come and visit me, I would always be in this very busy place. And he'd always chew this little trick. He would find something in front of me. In fact, I remember the last time he was looking in my, he was in my studio, and he looked at my stapler. And I have a very unique stapler in here. It's black and gold, and it's very pretty. It's old-fashioned. But he looked at it, and he said, look at the shape of this. And he called my attention to the stapler. But he wasn't calling my attention to the workings of the stapler. He was calling my attention to being here. And he would do the same thing with a pencil, with a piece of paper, with anything available. Look somewhere around you right now, my friends. Find an object. Regard the object. And regard means just be present with it. Just be present with the object right now. That's putting the hole in the cheese, you see? You could be busy. You could be active. You could be doing a dozen things. But you got to find a way to put a little hole in that cheese. You just got to be able to relax a little in the middle of your tasks. Because there are parts of us that want to prevent us. It's almost like once the chemistry gets going, we can't imagine stopping. You know, you ever start cleaning a house and say, I think I'll meditate in the middle of it. You want your energy. So chemistry gets going, and it gets you going. And here's where you got to get a little dopamine squirt and a little relaxation, and here's where consciousness helps you. And by consciousness, I mean you say to yourself, I'm going to be doing what I'm doing, but I'm including my presence. Now, very interesting, brings me to the concept of the human being. What is a human being? Is it always a human doing? No, there are times that the human has to just be. So when you're doing, try to become a human being. And in order to do that, you need to focus on any one thing that brings air into your life, that puts a hole in the cheese. You know, it reminds me of the song by the Beatles, Tomorrow Never Knows, that in the lyrics, the Beatles spoke about, turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream. It is not dying. It is not dying. It's as if they knew, and many of us felt, that if we turn off our mind, we're going to slide into an abyss and not be able to come back, not be able to do what we're doing. Lay down all thoughts and surrender to the void. It is shining. It is shining. Of course, they were doing this with significant help from lysergic acid, but it was shining. Yet you may see the meaning of within. It is being. It is being. And I think that's a secret of where we're trying to go. We're trying to get to a point where everything we do can be done with consciousness. And the kind of consciousness that says, I am present. I am a loving being. I can handle stress. I can handle pain. And I could handle doing. Welcome back to the Dance of Life. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 1 p.m. We're talking about technology and kind of technology overload. While waiting for an elevator at the Fairx Oaks Mall near her home in Virginia, Janice Im, who works in early childhood development, saw a troubling incident between a young boy and a mother, and she wrote, "The boy, who Miss Im estimates is about 2.5 years old, made repeated attempts to talk to his mother, but she wouldn't look up from her BlackBerry. He's like, 'Mama, Mama, Mama,' Miss M recalled. And then he starts tapping her leg and she goes, 'Just wait a second, wait a second.' Finally, he was so frustrated, he goes, 'Ah,' and tries to bite her leg. Now, much of the concern we have about cell phones, instant messaging, twittering, have been focused on how children who incessantly use the technology are affected by it. But parents' use of this technology and its effect on their offspring is now becoming an equal source of attention, concern to some child development researchers. Now, of course, anything would be a concern to a child development researcher because that's what they do. They get concerned. That's how they make a living. So it's always a good source for an idea. You know, I'm concerned. It means I'm not worried and it's not bad, but I'm concerned. Well, Sherry Turkell, director of the MIT Initiative on Technology and Self, has been studying how parental use of technology affects children and young adults. After 5 years and 300 interviews, she found that feelings of hurt, jealousy, and competition are widespread. In her studies, Dr. Turkell said, over and over, kids raise the same three examples of feeling hurt and not wanting to show it when their mom and dad would be on devices instead of paying attention to them. At meals, during pickup after school, or an extracurricular activity, or during a sports event. You know, what do? You're going out to dinner with your mom. You're at a pizza parlor, and who? She doesn't want to pay attention to you. But text message? Phew, she has those overgrown thumbs. You know, eventually, I think people are going to become like lobsters. You know, you're going to have just thumbs. But think about it. Dr. Turkell said she recognizes the pressure adults feel to make themselves constantly available for work, but added that she believes in a greater force compelling them to keep checking the screen. You know, it's just like you can't keep away from it. Now, imagine going out on a date with someone you love. And when you're not looking, they're staring down at their lap and texting away. What a bad feeling that is. It's something so engrossing about the kind of interactions people do have with screens that they wall out the world. One researcher said, I spoke to children who try to get their parents to stop texting while driving and got resistance. Because people like to text and drive, and we've been seeing that that's one of the great sources of accidents. It's actually become illegal in certain states to text while driving. But when you try to get somebody to stop, in the middle of doing it, they kind of resist. They say, it's just one more message, just one more sentence. And it's a little like just one more drink, like an addiction. Now, what's worse than that is, I think, the kind of communication that takes place with texting and emailing via phone. Email used to be fun. It used to be letters were terrific. Receiving a letter. I received a letter from somebody who died last week. Yep, a woman had written me a letter, always meant to send it, never sent it, had it for a while. She died. Her daughter picked up the letter and sent it to me. So I received a letter from a lady who died. The letter was beautiful, so thought out, so pleasant, such a beautiful stream of consciousness. All right, enter email. You could be nice on email, But, you know, there's these emoticons and there's these other cute little things that help you shorten your phrase. And a couple of people, like me, I don't type very well, so I become very brief on my emails. I don't write long, pretty ones. And people tend to be very efficient on email. Then get into not only email. Now, this is when you have a whole computer screen in front of you, but now you have a phone in front of you. And you write, and it really sounds psychotic. Because what you see on the screen is just four lines at most. Not even four lines, maybe 20 words at most. And then that thought passes your mind, and you go on to another thought. I have one friend who emails me, who I really, because she emails me and I pick it up on my computer. But she emails me from her phone, and it sounds crazy. She sounds like she should be put away, says she needs medication. Because she has one complete thought, and then something must happen to her. She must not send the email. Something else happens, you know. She goes and tends to some of her patients, or she does them. She goes back to writing the rest of the email, but it's totally disconnected. And you have the kind of feeling that this person should be in a straitjacket. You know, they shouldn't be allowed to send this kind of thing. You could kind of pass it along, and it's like what happened to their poor brain. But, of course, if you're the sender, you think you're sending a love message. No, you should be forced to have every time someone sends a text message or an email via phone, you have to send it to yourself first. Then you have to read it. Then you have to forward it. Because if it doesn't make sense, why are you sending it? But that's the new form of love. Love is now this group of phrases that are not supposed to make sense. And so when somebody emails you or texts you via phone, you scan it. You don't really read it. You scan it, but you never take it to heart, right? It's just gone. Well, Laura Scott Wade, the director of ethics for a National Medical Organization in Chicago, said that 6 months ago, her son, Lincoln, then 3 and a half, got so tired of her promises to get off the computer in just one more minute that he resorted to the kind of tactic parents typically use. He makes me set the timer on the microwave, and when it dings, he'll say, oh, come on, and don't bring your phone. Poor kid. Now, he's involved in technology by setting timers on microwaves, and I know she thought this was cute to write. But, gee, Laura. Now, not all child development experts think smartphone and laptop use by parents is necessarily a bad thing, because parents have always had to divide their attention. And researchers point out that there's a difference between quantity and quality when it comes to conversation between parent and child. If you have to be at a job all the time, or if you have to be attentive, or if you have to go somewhere, that's one thing. If you could now take your child with you and attend to things, that's another. So maybe the technology is not such a bad idea and works so badly. It's just the compulsiveness of it. It's just when you can't stop, when you can't keep your thumbs out of your pocket. That sounds funny. Now, it comes back to quality time. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're taking a look at technology and how technology is, and we're trying to see it without much judgment, seeing it as a form of evolution. You know, here we are. We're evolving. The human species is going in another direction. We originally learned as chimpanzees how to use tools to break open coconuts, right, and dig, be able to wash off our potatoes before we ate them. We learned. Now here we are with new tools, extensions of our bodies. Right? Our bodies fall down, we live longer, but the shell breaks down. You now develop technology to carry you beyond your body. Thumbs that communicate. Who ever thought it would be the thumb? You know, when you think about the difference between, what was that monkey? Not the rhesus monkey. The prehensile thumb was the thing that made us separate. The fact that you had a thumb that could separate you from other animals, that you could grab with, it started with putting us in the humanoid condition. The humans had thumbs, so do some monkeys. And some humans I know are monkeys. But they had thumbs that they could grab onto things. And now it's the thumbs again. Who would have ever thought that it were the thumbs that would make a difference? Honor your thumbs, my friend. Honor your thumbs. It's an amazing thing where it's gonna, they're going to grow. They're going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and the rest of us will shrink away, and we'll just be thumbs on. You'll meet a guy, and you'll say, what kind of guy? Oh, he's got some thumbs. Right? Oh, thumbs up. Right? You should see his thumbs. So back to quality time. Distracted time is not high quality time. Whether parents are checking a newspaper or their BlackBerry, distracted time is not quality time. He noticed that smartphones and laptops may enable some parents to spend more time at home, which in turn result in more rather than less quality time overall, accumulatively, because you're there more. You know, I'm home. I'm here. I'm home. Okay, sure, toss the ball back. Okay, I could toss the ball back because I don't have to be at work, because I could be over here working on my cell phone. There's little use research on how parents' constant use of such technology affects children, but experts say there's no question that engaging parenting, talking, explaining things to children, and responding to their questions is the bedrock of early childhood learning. Maybe so. Not my nephew. My nephew, you ask him anything, and whoop, he whips out his Apple phone, and he gets a definition before the word even gets out of my mouth. And he teaches me. And I'll say something to him, I said something to him about cantilever. I said, oh yeah, those beams look cantilevered. And he didn't ask me, what does it mean? He whipped out his cell phone, and he said, oh, I didn't know you could do that when you do architecture. And he taught me, and I said, well, I didn't really know that's what it was. Just the way I see things. And he showed it to me and taught me more than I knew. So I don't think that children are even bothering to ask their parents anymore. They're being taught to find out for themselves. Well, that must be a good thing, don't you think? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Must be a good thing that children are now researching themselves and finding out for themselves. Kind of reminds me of the alligators. Why the alligators? In all of nature, there are three rules, right? Rule number one, find something to eat. All of nature, every plant, animal. Rule number two, regenerate. Propagate. Do something. Reproduce yourself. Rule number two, right? Every animal, every species has got to have a baby somehow. Even if that baby is a thought or a new building or something. Rule number three, don't get eaten. Find something to eat, have a baby, don't get eaten. That's the rule of life. Your baby could be an idea, could be a concept, it could be the new phone that just came out. Do something that recreates yourself. So if the three rules in life are just find something to eat and reproduce, and then we go to the alligators. Now, why alligators? Because alligators are very interesting. Alligators, they're amphibians. No, they're not amphibians. They're marsupials. No, they're not marsupials. Alligators, they need to lay their eggs on land because they can't lay them underwater because there's too many things that would eat them. But there's not many places on land you could lay your alligators' eggs, because if you lay them, they'll get eaten by things on. So they go into caves. And they find rocks above caves, which are not being touched by the water, and they spread their eggs all over these rocks. See? Now, the alligator, once it has laid its eggs, that's it. You never see that alligator again. The baby alligator don't see its mom ever. Never. One by one, the eggs hatch. The alligator falls from the rock straight into the water, and swims away to become his own kind of guy. Never sees a parent. Now imagine if you gave all those baby alligators a cell phone. No, I can't go there. But just, is that what's going to happen to our children? They're going to become self-sufficient? Are we going to turn our kids? I mean, the alligators have gotten by for many years, you know. They're kind of survivors. Little research on how this technology affects children, but Of course, everybody who's a scary pot is going to say, watch out, you're destroying your children. I'm saying we're not destroying them, we're just getting them to be different. This new technology, this new world is making for a difference. I still say it's nice to hug your kids. I still don't think that there's a substitute for that, but me, I'm an old timer. You know, I'm just kind of stuck in this old model. There's a professor emeritus at the University of Kansas Lifespan Institute named Dr. Hart, and he said that more research is needed to find out whether the constant use of smartphones and other technology is really interfering with parent-child communications. Part of the reason that children in affluent homes, she studied, developed larger vocabularies by the time they were three, where their parents are holding kids, the kids are on their lap while the parents reading a book. It's important for parents to know they're talking to kids. They're transferring affection as well as words. When you talk to people, there's always an implicit message, I like you, or there's a message, I don't like you. It is important, it seems, for parents to communicate to that child whatever they're teaching to include the I like you. When you prioritize technology to your child, when you go to your cell phone instead of talking to your child, you're saying, I don't like you as much as I like my phone and whoever it is I'm talking to on my phone or communicating with. Meredith Sinclair, a mother in Wilmette, Illinois, said she had no idea how what she was doing was, called her addiction to email and social media websites was bothering her children until she established an email and internet ban between 4 and 8 p.m., and her children responded with glee. When I told them, she said, my 12-year-old Max was like screaming, yes, yes, Mom, thank you. So maybe there should just be a time, you know, a time of ban. Maybe just if we could put a little Swiss cheese in here, back to finding the holes in the cheese. Maybe it's not a bad thing, but maybe we have to consider all of it. What do you think, my friends? You know, I would love to hear your opinions on this subject, and you could do that by sending me an email. The email would go to armand@thepositivemind.com, armand@thepositivemind.com. And again, you know, the temptation is always to say it's no good, but that's only a temptation. I think we'll be able to find something much deeper. This subject, while we're looking at this subject, let's just take one more look at one more part of it. Now here we have the adults and their knowledge of technology, and then we have the children and their knowledge of technology, and who do you think knows more? I mean, the kids do, right? It's the first time in any generation that kids know more about things except Barbie dolls. I mean, kids used to know about Barbie dolls, things that Mama didn't know. But what is the thing that kids know about? Now, they know about technology, and they know much more than you. And they will mention things. Do your young children or teenagers know more about technology and computers than you do? Do you scratch your head in amazement and utter confusion when your children discuss the latest and greatest technological advances that you know nothing about? And while doing this, do you think to yourself, do you just say to yourself, is there any, what is this that they're talking about? And do you as an adult, as many adults do, figure, I'm not going to be interested in that. I'm not going to be interested in downloading movies through your phone if the movie's playing around the corner. I don't care. You're going to make little judgments like that's illegal or that's no good. Advances in technology are playing an ever-increasing role in our lives. Most of it positive, but it's only going to increase. What's a parent to do? Now, here's one of the cases where your child, through their technology and their knowledge of technology, is going to have communication with different parts of the world, and you are not going to be able to protect them. You're not going to know. Here's what you could do. Become educated. And I really mean it. for the first time, become the student and let your child be the teacher. Don't let up on your kid. Remember when you used to go to school and they were trying to teach you French and you couldn't conjugate a verb and you felt stupid? And you said, one day I'm going to grow up and I'll never have to feel stupid like that again. Well, when your child tries to teach you, you're going to feel stupid. Because the kid's going to show you things that they do so automatically, and you're going to say, ah. And you're going to shut off the computer, you're going to wipe out things, you're going to make mistakes. But become the student. This is the first time in history that adults truly become the students of children. You know, the Eskimos used to believe that every child born represented God. Not all Eskimos, some Eskimos. And therefore, a child must never be treated with disrespect because the child is your teacher. Well, here is a real evolution of that thought. What if you took the time to say to your child, I want you to teach me everything so I could be a master of the computer and the cell phone and the smartphone. Show me. And don't quit. Become a student. Something's going to happen. Of course, children don't want to teach their parents. They don't want to teach their parents because they want parents to be parents. But maybe we could reverse that. Maybe we could form a new bond between parent and child where parent becomes the student of the child. It's the only way that you're going to protect them. Because your judgment as an adult has to come on an informed mind, not from a misinformed mind. You can say things out of stupidity that will make your kid discredit anything that you would say to them. But if you let them teach you, let them teach you everything. Let them show you whatever it is. Don't get tired of it. Have lesson time. You know when you got time for their homework? Set up a relationship between you and them where you say to them, teach me. I want to learn from you. There have been people who have gone through terrific ordeals all by themselves because their parents had no idea what they were going through. You, my friend, could be one of those extraordinary parents who can do things that could help your child, because the teenagers and children are not protected by a parent's assumption that the online service providers are regulating what's going on in chat rooms, social networking. So your child has ways of hiding things from you, and not even hiding, they don't think you're interested. They don't think you could get it. Well, here's the advantage of it, my friend. One of the things we learned about the neuroplastic brain is as you get older, every time you learn something new, you grow new brain cells. So it'll stop you from aging and developing your own dementia, number one. And number two, it'll form a greater bond with your children, I think. Well, this is Armand DeMille with you, with The Positive Mind. We've been exploring this issue here of technology and how it affects our relationships. Let it bring you together. Hey, does anybody ever send anybody a kiss on email? Do you know there's no... Oh, what is it? XOXOXO? That's even getting out of date, right? Yeah. Pretty soon they're going to have smell phones. You know, you could smell your friend. Or your friend says, here's some food. You can smell it. And they pass the cell phone over the food and you can smell it. An amazing thing. Well, we're in the middle of all of it. Lucky us. I will be back with you soon, my friends. Thanks for being with us. Send me an email, armand@thepositivemind.com. I will be back with you soon.